This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Bastille Clockwork is on now at Chambers at 916 Gallery in the Pearl and runs until February the 2nd. Welcome, Mariana. It's lovely to have you here at KBOO.
Likewise, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
The show is called Celestial Clockwork. The title refers to the visionary timekeeping of Herschel McShugal. Mariana Trace is director and steward of the Society for Nebulous Knowledge, an institution that seeks to preserve these supposedly forgotten histories. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Acknowledging, documenting, and preserving these lost archives is our primary mission, as is their presentation for the public view.
And what is the Society for Nebulous Knowledge?
Well, the Society for Nebulous Knowledge is a rare collection. We focus on research that seeks to unburden science of its grave purpose and offer a more open interpretation of the natural world. So toward that end, we collect and preserve previously discarded chronicles and objects, emphasizing the influence of astronomical, metaphysical, and other certain obscure phenomena. You could say we are a collection that embraces a cosmological perspective. And as such, most of the collection is extremely delicate, so it is viewable only by appointment and only for limited periods of time. Actually, the staff at Chambers Gallery has been through extensive training in order to be able to temporarily house and exhibit this portion of the collection.
And the Society focuses on amateur scientists. How do science and the concept of nebulous relate to each other?
Well, I understand the term nebulous in the name of our institution to be related to the nebula we know in space, that is the interstellar clouds of hydrogen, helium, and intergalactic dust that may be, as we speak, growing into stars. But I understand the word has various definitions and could be taken on different levels. As far as the scientific and artistic practices of the historical figures in our collection, most of them are women with brilliant observations and intuitions about the natural world, which often predate what was then being called scientific findings. In all cases, there appears to be a distinct link between the artistic and the scientific, as both follow mystery into unknown worlds and seek a kind of a new truth.
Mm-hmm. One of the panel about Herschel McShugal says he was a clockmaker from Astoria, Oregon. In 1867, he envisioned the measure of time in an unprecedented way. He set out to build a clock that would keep time for 10,000 years. You happened upon a collection of artifacts, and then the society recovered them?
Yeah, that's right. He was the town clockmaker in Astoria around the turn of the century. And we also knew that a clockmaker had been a great influence on the young Annabella Kaposch, one of the society's earlier discoveries. And some years back, in what was then known as the Oregon Biennial, we mounted the collection at the Portland Art Museum and thought it would be helpful for viewers to provide an audio tour. It was then that we revealed to them what we knew, that through her diaries, we learned that there was a clockmaker who had seen in Annabella a great aptitude for observation and concentration, and that he accepted her request to be mentored by him. But it was only through closer examination of the Kaposch archives that we uncovered the information that led us to a second set of diaries, which actually were housed at another location and recount in great detail her time spent with McShugal, as well as her research work on the 10,000-year clock. We found a box containing timepieces and a log of the research progress, sketches, and quite a few of his bow ties, actually.
Well, what's with scientists and bow ties?
I couldn't tell you.
This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. I'm Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus. This week our guest is Mariana Trace. Her show Celestial Clockwork is now on at Chambers at 916 Gallery through February the 2nd. So, Mariana, what exactly is in the exhibit when somebody walks into Chambers? What are they going to see?
Right. Currently at Chambers, there are 8 very large photographs of the tiny timepieces, as well as a video from the Long Now Foundation. And inside a humidity-controlled museum case are the artifacts themselves that we collected. So the timepieces, McShugel's clockmaker's tools and instruments, sketches, and all kinds of plans for his magnificent clock are on view now. The timepieces are actually so very small. They're very difficult to see, but also they're astoundingly delicate and beautiful, so we knew that they needed to be seen. And so we came upon this idea that we could, what we called, faithfully capture these timepieces and present them to the public in a way that paid homage to McShugel's vision of planetary time.
Mm-hmm. These are watches, right? Not clocks. Small watches?
There's a little bit of everything, actually.
Okay. So you said you faithfully capture them. What does that mean?
Well, by that, we mean that we interfere with the integrity of the artifact as little as possible through the process of documenting it. And we utilize photography's most advanced methods to truthfully depict and magnify an object. So this includes the use of temperature-controlled, high-resolution scanners that come into very little contact with the actual object. And interestingly enough, these are called planetary scanners. And they're typically used for rare books and delicate artifacts. So that's how we went about optically recording, or what we called faithfully capturing, the tiny complexities of Herschel McShugel's timepieces. The scans then produced very large image files, which then, through an image editing program, have only the most egregious dust removed from them, so thereby protecting the authenticity of the age and decay. And finally, it was a really exciting moment when we made the decision that we would create very large prints that would acknowledge and pay tribute to the spirit behind McShugel's vision of what he called planetary time, which relates directly to the idea of the 10,000-year clock.
Mm-hmm. What is planetary time?
Well, planetary time is a term we ran across in McShugel's archive, from the diaries of Annabella Gaposch, where she details her time with him. We learned that Bob, she called him Bob, I guess everyone knew him as Bob, suffered from these terrible racking headaches during the full moons of winter, and that it was during one of these spells that he experienced the remarkable vision from which the 10,000-year clock is later born. He confided in Annabella that he felt he could actually see time in visual form, and that he felt that maybe only the planets in space would have access to this same view. She wrote that he felt elevated to a unique view, which he described as, quote, unspeakably glorious, long and steady, bright like a winter sun, and more than long seeing, it was long thinking.
So this is the 6th major discovery by the Society for Nebulous Knowledge. What were some of the others?
Well, we carry our mission in several different ways. One is to preserve the actual archive of works. An example of that would be one of our most celebrated discoveries of the collection, Annabella Gaposch, in fact, the mentee of Herschel McShugel. She was a 19th century astronomer and photographer who created and illustrated her astronomical observations through primal photographic methods in her kitchen. She used baking soda for star clusters and powdered sugar for various nebula, and sprinkled on black backgrounds, discovered a methodology of astronomical illustration. So in her case, we preserve the actual works in the archive and present it in its entirety, including the photographs and the original frames from over a century ago, along with her kitchen utensils, diaries, personal artifacts, anything we got our hands on, we displayed for public view in its original form. Likewise, in the case of musician Viviana Spokojnanich, whose work we discovered through a coincidental meeting with a musical archivist, we preserve the actual recordings and the original music scores, as well as the documentary photographs of her residence. We actually even found her Sunday dress and put that on display in the museum. Spokoyninich was a gifted 19th century Russian composer who had emigrated to the U.S. and found work as a maid. And from the high windows of her maid's quarters, she became enamored with the night sky and engaged in a diligent study of stellar positions. Through this process, she fashioned a groundbreaking new method for musical composition. And this culminated in a musical that she intended to be performed on the moon.
On the moon?
Yes, and actually the Society has begun negotiations with NASA to stage the full production as soon as we get there.
How is it you came to be steward of the collection?
Well, I came to the collection through a serendipitous lineage of women, mostly anonymous women, and I was sought out and given the charge of overseeing and adding to the collection until I can locate the appropriate successor.
Are you looking for someone now?
Not currently.
Okay. Just to go back to that musical on the moon, can people hear that music anywhere?
Well, we have a pretty extensive website that contains all of our collections so far, but we haven't added the music. Also, we did a documentary about Annabella Kapoch some years back, and that's not just yet on that website.
Mm-hmm. What's the website?
It's www.societyfornebulousknowledge.com.
Okay. And you're musical yourself, correct?
Somewhat.
You can play an instrument?
At times.
Okay. Well, I always like to ask artists what they listen to while they're working. So let's hear a piece. It's from the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And it's the main theme. And the composer is John Bryan.
That's right. And I find when I go through the archives that it's it really supports my process to listen to movie soundtracks.
That was the main theme from the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind by John Bryan. I'm talking to Mariana Trace, and we were talking about the Society for Nebulous Knowledge. There have been six collections have been on display. Could you just tell us about some of the others?
Sure. The another character, historical figure that we discovered was Valentina Fielder, and another way that we work in the archive, much like with Herschel McShugel, is that we sometimes will acquire an archive, and then after studying it, we'll attempt to translate, reenact, or otherwise interpret the work, as we've done with Herschel. So Valentina Fielder was a farm girl in southern Indiana and had apparently found a way to communicate with flowers. So we discovered a wooden cabinet containing about 200 of Valentina Fielder's notebooks and loose sketches detailing her methods, and it was buried behind an abandoned shed. Each of these notebooks contained hundreds of drawings that were kind of a blossom in hand drawings detailing specific approaches for communications with various plant species, which could take place only on the night of the full moon. And her understanding of flowers was so profound that it's easily identifiable as a precursor to the later widespread practice of Victorian floriography. In fact, her notebooks are remarkably consistent with the well-known Victorian language of flowers, which mm-hmm. you may be familiar with. In fact, it would appear we could conclude that The meaning of a flower was not at all an arbitrary sentiment assigned by humans in Victorian times, but rather it was the flowers themselves that were revealing their essence to receptive individuals throughout time. Another way that we work in this society is since we've become known for this, we're sometimes called upon to investigate what have been called befuddling events of the natural world. And a few years ago, we investigated the appearance of botanical signs in a nearby forest at Tryon Creek State Park. The signs apparently were announcements that came directly from nature in an attempt to communicate with us in a manner that we would find familiar and comforting. And that is through the use of the common botanical sign.
Mm-hmm. These are the black signs with the white lettering.
Yes, that's right. And all of this was started by the curious young chemist named Emma Peel around 1918, who had surprisingly discovered that her potions and remedies could be made more or less powerful by the cycles of the moons and trajectories of the planets. And she developed what she called a cosmic medicinary and healed thousands of people. And she also managed to amass enough wealth that she began gathering works of this nature and later called it the Society for Nebulous Knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds like biodynamic farming, really. You know, plant your grapes on the cycle of the moon and you get better wine.
Yeah. When did we figure that out?
So a lot of this knowledge is... it's been sort of bubbling under, I think, and you know these people have they're sort of prescient in the sense that let's go back to the clockmaker if we can, Herschel McDougall.
Sure.
So his clock is supposed to chime, or what is it supposed to do?
McDougall's clock?
Yeah.
Well, McDougall's clock doesn't currently exist. So his, you know, his time expired before he was able to mm-hmm. actually build it. But
yeah.
What we've recovered are all of his plans through the Annabella Gaposchke archives.
Yeah.
We've discovered all of his plans and sketches and details for the 10,000-year clock.
Mm-hmm. So I think anyone who reads Wired magazine would know about Danny Hillis and the Long Now Foundation.
Right.
Of San Francisco, they're building a large analog clock, which is going to last, one of its cycles is 10,000 years. It never plays the same chimes for 10,000 years. And it's being built in Seattle, I think, and they're going to put it in a giant hole in a mountain in Texas. And this sounds very similar to what McDougall was thinking.
Yeah, it's really quite a coincidence, and it's a great story, I think, because we did connect with the Long Now Foundation, which, by the way, is Long Now is named after a Brian Eno song, and mm-hmm. Brian Eno is actually composing the different chimes.
Oh, really?
For is it every 100 years or every 1,000 years, or whatever the interval is.
Every year you get one chime.
Yeah, he's now composing a different chime for every however many years.
Mm-hmm. It won't take him long.
Well, it's a great story, I think. And I think about ideas traveling through time and kind of our collective consciousness. I read somewhere that a good idea will always travel through time and persist in the minds of the next generation. So when we first learned about the McDougall archive this past summer and his dream of the 10,000 years, we did just, you know, a basic online search for the 10,000-year clock and surprisingly came upon this website for the Long Now Foundation. And they appeared to be building this colossal clock in near Martha, Texas, actually, to keep time for 10,000 years. And so we contacted them, of course, to see, you know, if they had heard of Herschel McDougall. And they had not, but were very delighted to know of him. And we both agreed that it was an incredible streak of good fortune to have found each other. Not only did the Long Now Foundation 10,000-year clock have this amazing precedent in McDougall, mm-hmm. but McDougall's dream had somehow come to life only a century and a half later in this next generation of optimistic minds. So And the Long Now Foundation's mission states that it hopes to provide a counterpoint to our accelerating culture and make long-term thinking more common. And interestingly, that's exactly what McShugal was trying to do. So they share this deep respect for what McShugal called long thinking. So when I shared the McShugal story with the Long Now Foundation, specifically his experience of planetary time, they mentioned that there's actually a mechanism in their clock that aligns with the planets, and this is called the Orrery clock. I think I'm saying that correctly.
How do you spell that?
Orrery. It's O-R-R-E-R-Y.
Okay.
And this is the part of the clock that aligns with the planets, because, you know, the planets will change position over time and we have to constantly realign. So they kindly provided me with a very informative video about it that mm-hmm. now shows alongside the McShugal installation at Chambers.
Right, that's there playing in a, a little alcove. Did you notice any other coincidences about what they're doing and what Herschel was doing?
No, I think the spirit behind it was very much the same, which is, you know, what McShugal called long thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of our, and what the Long Now calls a counterpoint to our accelerating culture.
I guess the Long Now people have a ton of money from Jeff Bezos of Amazon.
That's right.
Whereas Herschel just had his little
clock shop in Astoria with the help of Annabella Gaposchk, of course.
Mm-hmm. Times change. So can we hear another bit of music that you listen to while you're working?
Certainly. I listen to a lot of Radiohead.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much the soundtrack of my studio.
Do you listen to recent Radiohead or
all
or,
of it?
All of it? Okay.
From
the remixes on
everything.
Spotify.
Yep.
Oh, wow. That's good. So you've picked out a track called Lotus Flower. Do you know what album this is from?
That's from the recent album, The King of Limbs.
Okay. That was Lotus Flower by Radiohead. I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week, our guest is Mariana Trace. Her show Celestial Clockwork is on now at Chambers at 916 Gallery in the Pearl till February the 2nd. Mariana, you come originally from what country?
Argentina.
What were your early influences in Argentina, and just tell us when you came to the U.S.?
Let's see here. I was born in Buenos Aires and lived there until I was 10 years old, and I do feel that my early influences have somehow prepared me for this kind of work with the Society for Nebulous Knowledge. And, you know, there are always so many influences that end up making you who you are, and I believe every single person and thing that enters your life is really intended to be there. And but in my early life, I see two things that had a very profound and formative effect. One is that, well, you know, first and foremost, I grew up in a vastly different culture, right? And it was a time of great political and economic distress. So this is the early 70s. In Buenos Aires, when a U.S.-backed military dictatorship had taken over in an effort to contain leftist politics in Latin America, which is something that was happening mm-hmm. quite a lot at the time. So very cruelly and completely arbitrarily, I would add, they did away with about 30,000 Argentinian people. And so I think the way that children understand so much more than we think they do, I intuited that at this time, in this place, you could not actually say a lot of what you wanted to say, and that it was not really safe to do so. that you had to create things that would kind of covertly communicate for you. And I think that the artist Vic Muniz, who grew up in a similar situation at the same time in Brazil, put it best when he said that it was kind of like living in a semiotic black market. That you could not, you know, trust information very much. You had to rely on nuances, and these shadowy ambiguities and uncertainties are, you know, especially dangerous when supported by authority. But luckily, another kind of almost identical thread of this kind of speaking in metaphor or code develops in my childhood and is altogether from a different spirit. My grandfather, who I adored and was a great influence on my life, was a great storyteller, and we used to tell me really quite astonishing stories, the kind that the culture I live in now might call magical realism. But to me, it's just the way I've always understood and interpreted the world.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would in turn offer him some equally magnificent story that, you know, I had heard somewhere, I don't remember where. And in this way, we went back and forth, passing the hours, you know, while the country was falling apart and my parents were plotting our escape. In addition to this, all museums are free in Argentina. When we moved to the U.S., we moved to the city of Philadelphia, which is chock full of history and historical mm-hmm. museums. And I think you roll this up all together, you know that I've been to quite a lot of museums. And I suppose that all told, it does follow somehow that I was selected to oversee the collections of mm-hmm. the Society for Nebulous Knowledge.
Right. What's your favorite museum?
My favorite museum, well, currently I have to admit it's the Society for Nebulous Knowledge.
Because mm-hmm. you know it so well.
It's very close to my heart.
Mm-hmm. So it's all true? This truth-seeking?
I'm sorry?
This sort of truth-seeking that you're involved in, it's all, you know, it goes somewhere, you feel satisfied?
Well, it's an interesting question, this question of what is true. You mean mm-hmm. what is true in the museum?
Yeah, as an archivist, it's always
right.
difficult.
Right, yes. Well, you know, we've been asked things like, is Terry Todemeyer or Anna Gritz on the website, are they real? And of course, Terry Todemeyer is real, God rest his soul. And Anna Gritz, the curator who conducted the interview with me some years back, yes, I believe she lives in London now. But that said, the Society for Nebulous Knowledge is a collection that subscribes to the original idea of the museum as the place of the muse. In other words, a place to attain a certain aloofness about everyday affairs, to commune with the muses, in short, a place to be inspired. So, both science and art have a compelling hand in all of this. For example, a few years back, we never would have believed that there's a flower on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
But recently, we know with the Mars rover roving around many things about Mars, and now we have evidence through the authority of a photograph that this is so, although recently it appears that it's a pebble, not a flower.
Mm-hmm. I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO. This week our guest was Mariana Trace. Her show Celestial Clockwork is on now at Chambers at 916 Gallery in the Pearl and runs till February the 2nd. Thank you so much, Mariana.
Thank you for having me, Joseph.
January 18, 2013. KBOO Navigator Report. Overwhelming support and a record number of donations were received at the close of 2012. Thank you, KBOO donors. 6 months of hard work have resulted in a more knowledgeable board and updated board policies, completing a grant from the Meyer Memorial Trust. A new partnership with mainstreamed media will give reporters with developmental disabilities a voice on the KABU Evening News. The KABU Council of Elders will be gathering in March. For more information, contact Lynn Fitch, 503-231-8032, extension 222, or navigator at kboo.org. This has been the Weekly Navigator Report. Thank you.